I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World. We're a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH here in Boston. There is no let-up for the people of Aleppo. There were more airstrikes and bombings today in Syria's largest city. The death toll from the violence there just this week is now 150, and conditions in the city continue to deteriorate. Dr. Farida is the only female obstetrician left in the besieged eastern section of Aleppo. For security reasons, she uses only her first name. We reached her today at the hospital. She told us she usually walks to work because gasoline is in short supply. But this evening, the hospital sent a car for her. It drove without its headlights on.
I came here without any lights because the warplane was bumping in the streets. And so the driver told me we have to go without any lights. No, any car in Aleppo can make the light on, because when the airplane see any moving lights, he will bomb them or with heavy artillery or with guns, with the heavy guns.
The danger isn't over when she gets there. Hospitals are now airstrike targets in Aleppo. But Dr. Farida brings her 7-year-old daughter to work with her every day. She says there's only one other family left in the apartment building where she lives, and she doesn't want to leave her daughter alone.
It's very bad. We feel alone. I feel alone. My mother and my dad, my brothers, all is out. No one stay in Aleppo. There's no electricity and no cars. Aleppo was the city who was not going to sleep. The people was always in the street, going to markets, go to swim, go to everything. Now it's a ghost city.
One physician here in the U.S. who works closely with Dr. Farida is Syrian-American Dr. Zaher Salul. He's a critical care specialist at Christ Advocate Medical Center in Chicago. Salul has gone on 5 medical mission trips to Syria since the war there began. He's deeply impressed with Dr. Farida's commitment to remain in Aleppo.
She's an amazing person. You know, her colleagues, says that she's equal to 1,000 men. And when you hear that in Aleppo from this conservative society speaking about women, I mean, that speaks volume about the strength and the leadership of this woman. Her husband is an eye specialist also, and she has one small daughter. Her main concern is her patients. She was telling me just last week that she started to use home threads to suture her patients who have C-sections because she's running out of surgical sutures, and she said she's going to stay as long as she can, and even with the risk on her life and her family.
You were born and raised in Syria, Dr. Salul. You had your medical education there. In fact, you and Bashar al-Assad were classmates from 1982 to 1988. Tell us what his reputation was during those medical school days.
He was humble, not arrogant, wasn't perceived as brutal or ruthless. Some people, especially his close friend, thinks that he cheated his way in the exams. But other than that, nothing really special was about him.
So after getting a degree in Damascus, Assad moved to London in 1992 to specialize in ophthalmology. And he spent many years abroad and returned to Syria to take the helm after his older brother died. And after he'd moved into the palace, he'd invite doctors like you to gatherings there. Tell us about your first meeting with Assad after he became president in 2002.
In the first year after he became a president, he invited us, a group of us, to meet with him in the very impressive presidential palace in the top of the mountain overseeing Damascus. You don't feel that you're in a country in the Middle East. It looked like Switzerland. From the gardens around the palace, it was best marble I've ever seen inside. And he greeted us warmly. We were a group of 10. His wife also met with our spouses. And he talked for 2 hours about his vision about Syria. He doesn't sound as presidential when he talks. And sometimes, you know, his talk is very boring. You know, some of my friends were yawning. But anyway, I asked him this question about introducing political reforms to Syria because, I came from the United States and he was educated in the UK and people expected some opening in the political system. And at that time, it was called Damascus Spring. And he had this very long answer about the Syrian society and how tribal it is and how sectarian it is. And then he told me, well, Syrians are not ready for democracy.
When he said that, what did you think? And what did you think specifically about the future of Syria?
My friends told me that I'm not going to sleep in my house because I asked that question. They told me they're going to end up in the prison. But luckily, nothing like that happened. But people expected some openness in the system. You know, we had large number of educated people in Syria, huge middle class, and people were yearning for some of the freedoms that we enjoy in this country.
It's kind of extraordinary. There are all these doctors in the Syrian diaspora, you included. Do you all kind of see Bashar al-Assad, also a doctor, not practicing, but do you see him in the same light?
You know, he crossed many lines that doctors should not cross. You know, he swore the Hippocratic Oath, graduation ceremony, which we all attended, which implies that as a physician, you treat the friends and the enemies and you save lives. Definitely, his actions are the opposite of that. You know, he also, his regime targeted doctors and nurses. More than 750 doctors and nurses were killed in the last 5 years. Many hospitals were destroyed, mostly by his regime. And this is the opposite of being a physician or a humanitarian. I wanted him to look at the eyes of the patients I've seen in Aleppo, the young children who were pulled out from under the rubble of their houses, and some of them died, some of them were lucky.
You know, we read all these stories and see these images of people living through such enormous tragedy. Some people say we're just seeing the limits of American power and what this country can do. So what can we Americans who are watching, what do you want us to do?
Every citizen has a responsibility, I believe. I mean, this is the American values that, you know, I am proud that right now it's part of me, that we can organize, we can pressure our policymakers to do something. We have two moms in Chicago, Wendy and Becky, who organized this social media campaign called Stand with Aleppo. And they are urging average citizens who are not connected to Syria anyway to do their part by spreading the word and the pictures and the stories and contacting the president to do something. And I think each one of us should do something like that. Churches, synagogues, mosques should organize drives to donate to Syria and to the Syrian people. What's happening in Syria is affecting us, the anti-refugee sentiment, the xenophobia, the rhetoric that we are hearing right now here in the election season. Extremism, all of this is related to what's going on in Syria, and we have to stop this genocide. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, as Martin Luther King says.
Dr. Salul, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Marco, for having me.
Dr. Zahir Salul is a critical care specialist at Christ Advocate Medical Center in Chicago. He travels frequently to Syria. He was in Aleppo last July.